welcome to episode 98 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Henry Turner, principal of Newton North High School in Massachusetts. I heard him speak at ISTE during an Ignite session and immediately messaged him to be on the podcast. He talked about the amazing work his students did to bring equity into their school with an intense art installation, and I just knew I needed to have his voice on the show. Henry and I talk about the school's response to a lack of empathy of some students, how students can lend new ideas to problems at the school, the lack of trust in teachers in multiple arenas, why all educators need to be better listeners, and how empathy doesn't mean you can fix someone else's problems. So, sit back and enjoy episode 98 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Henry Turner. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Schreffler. And continuing the post-ISTE series of episodes, I'm talking today to one of the people that presented at the Ignite session I got to see while at ISTE, Mr. Henry Turner. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, Brad. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Like I said, I did get to see you at the Ignite, and I enjoyed your session. I always love the Ignite sessions. I think they're awesome. And I did one last year, so I definitely want to talk to you about that. But before we get to that, let's do this properly, like I'm almost a professional, and start with who you are and what's your position within education.
Sure, sounds good. So I am hailing from Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. I'm the principal of Newton North High School. Newton is a suburb just outside of Boston, where Boston College is where we are at. And we have two high schools. My school is 2,200 students. Newton South, on the other side of town, is 1,900 students. So we're, for our neck of the woods, we're fairly large. It's a city of 90,000 people. And Newton North is a large, comprehensive high school. We are very proud of our career technical education program. We are proud of all of the electives that we have for our students. We have an array of different extracurricular activities that we really encourage students to be participating in. And I'd say most importantly, we are proud of our diversity as a school in many different ways. And really try to promote that, and constantly are working at being an inclusive school that believes in equity and supporting all students.
And that's that's what you talked about at ISTE, is talking about running an inclusive school and some of the projects you've done there. Could you give sort of a recap of sort of what you talked about during your Ignite session?
Yeah, absolutely. So my first year was 2016, and in September, in the wake of the presidential election, a group of students drove around our main entrance that we refer to as Tiger Drive, honking the horn, waving the Confederate flag. And some students caught it on video, posted it on Facebook, and instantly it went viral. It was also in the wake of two other hate incidents happening in the school in the previous year. And so it really just hit people very, very hard. And our student response was pretty, was very outstanding that in response to it. But it also created a lot of tension and division within the school. So we took a number of different steps to respond to it. What I spoke about at ISTE was one of the ways in which we responded was I asked our design program, which is part of our career and technical education program, to help make our mission statement more visible around the school. And I thought this was going to be, you know, a couple of posters around the building, and that it would take the students a few weeks to design and create. But what I've been just blown away with is that it has now been a 2.5 year, now a 3 year project, in which students have used the design process to try to make our mission visible and clear for everyone in the community. Yeah, and so they've developed this piece of public art, in which we are now in the process of turning from a 2D image to a 3D image. And there's going to be a demonstration of our diversity as a school and also what our core beliefs are as a school.
Yeah, you know, when I heard you talk about the art installation, you know, it was an amazing project. You know, it's a very cool thing that you have going on, and you talk about it, and you're so passionate about it, and I love it. And I don't know about you, but I go into a lot of ISTE presentations after. Have you been to ISTE before?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so yeah. I go into ISTE presentations regularly with a hint of skepticism. You know, it's sometimes it feels like they will someone can present on something and make it sound grandiose and amazing, and then it ends up being okay, neat, that was kind of cool. So you know, I'm listening to your presentation, I'm like, wow, the work your kids are doing is amazing, it's really awesome, but you know, and I'm like really into it, and then you showed the picture of what they've created and the designs they have for these, they're tigers, right?
Three tigers
right. That are like so detailed and so intricate and just amazing looking that I was okay, send a DM, he needs to be on the show, we gotta talk, I gotta bring this in, because you know, it's just the work your kids have done is phenomenal. You know, and of course spurred by you reaching out to the right people, and it's funny to me that, you know, I don't think as a leader, so I'm currently in my master's program for educational leadership and going through these classes, and I don't think as a in training to become a principal do they say, well, if you have this incident where the media gets a hold of a video and it goes viral that shows some of the worst things your students could be doing, go to one of your classes at school and have them solve the problem. I don't think that's not in the be a principal textbook. Yeah. Especially don't go to the design thinking class. That's right, not...
right. Well, what's interesting about that is that that was my instinct, and it is also helpful to know that that's who we are as a school. One where our students are, you know, we have amazing adults who work with students, but we really have a core belief that our students can make a difference in their school, and something that we've been really trying to work on since day one, since that incident, is empowering our students. But I will say that, I mean, for a long time, the school, we've had, you know, a really thought-provoking student newspaper that really does cutting-edge news. We have a theater program that has a ton of student-run plays. We put on 13 performances a year. Wow. So we really do is a core belief that we can empower our students. And I think, you know, my response in that situation was needing help. And so it was a real world problem. But as we reflect on where we are now, is that the level of thinking that these kids have done and the level of learning throughout the process is just amazing. And that was the, you know, the element of, sharing with others during the Ignite was to demonstrate that when we empower our students, they are going to make a better difference in their community, and also they're going to learn more. And whether it's content or skills, without a doubt, the students in this project learned about 3D imaging. They learned about how to design for a community, how to research a community when you work within that community. And they were able to connect with professionals who are making similar responses to how you responded to the art. Professionals in 3D design who are completely amazed that 14 to 18 year olds are, you know, created that. So that to them empowers them to feel it, to realize that they do have the skill set to make a difference beyond high school.
And it's such a win-win, because, you know, I think, you know, first of all, like you said, humongous benefit to the students. Obviously, that real world connection, that valuable work, that true and authentic audience, all those things that we throw around as buzzwords. I mean, that's this assignment, this not assignment, I don't, that doesn't even begin to do the justice, but that's this task to a T. But also, like you said, you thought the solution was put up some posters. They said, no, 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 we got you.
Yeah. Like, and their solution is so much better than what you could have come up with on your own, or any leader could have come with up with on their own. And even if you had had the same idea, it wouldn't have had the impact that it has coming from the students, right? So it's on the one hand, it's phenomenal for the students. And on the other hand, it's the right way to lead a school, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also say that they, you know, one of the things they learned was how to deal with a nervous principal who is, you know, trying to understand how, why is it taking so long, and, you know, how much is this going to cost me? So it was, you know, to make it real is that they had to learn how to develop a sense of confidence to say, no, this is the right way to go. And when, you know, I think one of the, without a doubt, the big celebration we've had recently was when a local bank donated $10,000 after they gave their pitch. That level of confidence of, you know, getting me to buy in to this project and others led to them demonstrating to people who they don't know to buy in that this is the right thing. But
that's amazing. That's amazing to just get any business to go, yeah, here you go, teenagers. Here's $10,000. That's an accomplishment in of itself.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I'm imagining myself as like the teacher sponsor of this when every day that ticks by, I'm going, my principal really wanted this done. Really wanted this finished. And guys, you've made this a 3-year project now.
Yeah. So she the teacher for the program is been teaching for a while, and she, you know, she's taken on long-term projects like this. And, you know, she did coach me early on to say, you know, if you want our graphics program to do this, you know, they can get this done quicker. But if you want us to do it, it's going to take time. And, you know, I bought into her from her perspective that she can use this as part of her curriculum. That to me seemed like I'm not just asking them to do a job, but I'm actually going to help them to learn. And, you know, she designed this curriculum extremely well, geared towards their skill set. So we have an exploratory program, and then major 1, major 2, and major 3. And so she knew how to differentiate the workload too. So our major 3 students, created the design, but our exploratory students and our major 1 students have been doing a lot of grunt work. And so the whole program's feeling like they're a part of it, which is, I think, in terms of being a teacher, that for her to be able to think, you know, how do I get all kids to participate in this as opposed to just a couple of kids, I think is pretty incredible as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome project. It's amazing that, and if you have them, I would love to share the sketches in the show notes so that my audience can take a look at those, because they're the visual adds so much to what they've done, and then the way they stand out is just really, really cool. But I also don't want to undercut the work you're doing. And specifically, I do want to talk about, I always love talking to people that have done Ignites on the ISTE stage, and just what that experience was like from writing the Ignite to presenting it. What was that experience like for you?
So it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
You know, it's only a couple of minutes. As a principal, being in a large community, I often, give a lot of public presentations. So it wasn't the public presentation part of this that I was worried about. It was the short amount of time that I had. And, I remember a, Baptist, preacher speaking to my graduate course a couple of years ago about public speaking. And she talked about if she was asked to give a sermon for an hour, she wouldn't write anything down. If she was asked to give, you know, a half hour speech, she'd maybe write a couple of notes. But if she was asked to write something for 5 minutes, she would write the whole thing down verbatim. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to a friend of mine, Carrie Gallagher, who has done a few Ignites and has had a lot of success with her Ignites. So I asked her for some guidance, and she was so helpful in just relieving my, just giving me a sort of a North Star point of direction for how to strategize around it. So what I ended up doing with her guidance was, you're required to create the slide deck. And when I started to draft the speech, I wrote about a line or, maybe two sentences per slide, and then just memorized it. And a few weeks prior to ISTE, and then I practiced it in front of my family, which is something that I do not do often professionally with, is run my any speech in front of my family. So it was my 9-year-old daughter and my wife who I said this to, and what I was looking for was I being clear? Did they understand what I was talking about? And was I being myself? And I just got to see the video of the Ignite, and I could tell that I think as you were saying, is that I could find that I was really passionate about this topic, and technology education is something I am really passionate about, but social justice and civic action is something that really drives me. Empowering our students is something that really gets my heart beating. And so I think, tying something that I love around technology, but really being a part of an experience where our kids have made a difference in our school, once I got up there, that made it easy for me. But, something that when I do this again, because I would like to do this again, is, I started stressing out about what happens if I, if a slide goes, if I speak too slowly, if I speak too quickly, and I'm off slide. And I'd say a few days prior to the presentation was one of the low points where I was just like, I know this, but I feel like I keep making mistakes. But once you got in stage, I just really, relaxed and let the moment sort of take over a little bit.
It's very similar to my experience because, like you said, I did this past week and last 2 weeks, I've done probably 7 or 8 hours of trainings in chunks of an hour or so. Mm-hmm. Probably more, actually, probably 10 or 15 hours of training. But even still, most of those, I had a rough slide deck and a couple activities planned, and everything else, I kind of wing it. Right. It's just, it's fine. I could talk for an hour about anything. But I agonized over every single word of my 5-minute Ignite. I mean, every word was considered and worked with. Like, it's, to me, it is, I when I used to teach English, I would always describe to my students that, we did a huge poetry unit, and I always talk to them about how poetry is the use of words and spaces to make art. And the Ignite is kind of that equivalent to me. So a normal presentation, I just talk about words, I talk, I have a good time, I goof off. But Ignites, it's like every single word you say and every single word you don't say are so critical. And like you, I was stressing out. Now, I did not memorize it very far in advance. I was on the plane to Chicago reading it over and over and over and over again just to try to get it stuck in my head. But I was terrified I was going to forget the words, everything else. I mean, all the way up till about 2 minutes before I went on stage, I was like, I'm going to mess up. I'm just going to bring my phone. I'm going to have the notes in front of me so I can just read them. It'll be fine. And like two minutes or a minute before I got on stage, I set my phone on something backstage and I said, nope, I'm just going to go do this. And I blacked out. Don't remember what happened. Just like totally. And like you, I went back later and saw the video and said, you know what? That actually turned out pretty good. Yeah. That wasn't bad.
I have to say kudos to the production crew too, because I thought that they did a great job of just making us relaxed and excited about the opportunity and giving enough structure that I think we felt safe in that environment. When I was talking to one of, I was certainly getting a little nervous behind stage and talking to one of the producers, and he just talked about his experience last year and realize that if you just take a couple breaths, like just let the moment take over, and you're gonna be fine. You realize, I think, as a speaker too, people want you to do a good job.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's a friendly crowd. It's a friendly crowd.
Exactly.
Well, Henry, I love it. I love the project your kids have done. I love that you were out and presented it. I love that you presented it at a tech conference where it has honestly very little to do with technology. There's some technology aspects built in, but it's not really the focus. And I think that's really critical. And I think a lot of times at ISTE, we get stuck in the weeds of the technology and forget the message of it, right? And I think your presentation did a great job of getting that message that there are things more important and that should be tied in with the technology. And I think, that all flowed really well for me. And I really appreciated your presentation. It was great. I do blog write-ups and summaries of all of the stuff I watch for the most part. And I couldn't find words to describe your session afterwards. And it's funny because normally I take notes as I listen. And when I got to yours, I just kind of stopped and was watching. And so then I was going back through my blog post. I was like, I never even shouted you out in the blog summary. I really should have done that.
Thank you.
But I figured if I have you on a guest, we'll make up for it. It makes it fine. So
thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a fun experience. I agree with you around the technology piece. I've been a principal that has now led to one-to-one device transitions, and my dissertation was on technology leadership. And I thought that this was an excellent example of use of technology and learning, because the technology was absolutely the tool for the learning, but it wasn't the show, right? The student work was the show. I thought this was a good example of what we need to remind ourselves. But it's really about our students.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like it. We're doing good. 20 minutes in. We got great ideas flowing. I'm a fan. Let's move into the main part of my show, or the main questions I ask. And you told me beforehand you've heard a couple episodes, so you probably know what's coming. But I'm going to go to it. Anyways, the first question I ask all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
I think the biggest problem is a lack of trust of teachers, particularly politics, but in society. Every school that I have worked in and every school that I go to, there is not a lack of care and passion in any of those schools. Every educator that I interact with want to help kids. And I think the realization that getting all students to learn at a high level is really hard work and really challenging and complicated. But it makes it even harder when there's a lack of trust for educators out there.
It's certainly, I think any educator would tell you that's hard to argue with, or at least any U.S. educator for sure. It's not very often that we get national news stories about great teachers, right? It's kind of funny, actually, because a teacher near me just recently won a Grammy. He's a music director. He won they do the Grammys give out one music director a year, an award for being like the best music director in the country, whatever. And he won it. And first of all, 100% deserves it. He's been in the running for it since the first year they started doing it. Wow. And he finally won. And he's the most phenomenal director I've ever seen work. I mean, he's a magician. But it's funny how much local coverage he has gotten as this thing. Like, he gets, which is, again, major news. It's a Grammy. Great. But it is still, like, current event news. Like, he goes and speaks somewhere else, and our whole local area, like, blows up. It's as if it's the only good thing that a teacher has done in the last 25 years, and everybody has lost their minds. And it is, on the one hand, good for him, and he's using it as a vehicle to talk about arts and education and their importance. Awesome. On the other, it's a little frustrating to me that we're acting like this is this phenomenal event when there's teachers doing great work every single day in every single school in this country, and they go unrecognized, unnoticed, other than when they make one of the three mistakes that can get you fired as a teacher.
Mm. Yeah, and I think you're right. I was, as you were talking about the Grammy, I was thinking about the Key and Peele skit where they have the draft of the teachers, like it's the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. Only if that it was like if it was like that and the salaries came along with it. You know, I think you're right in terms of I think there are a lot of teachers who feel like they're working in fear, that they're going to make a mistake and therefore they're going to get bad press for it or bad publicity for it. And you know, I work in a district that you know, we're very close to Boston, so we do end up getting in the media a lot. And I agree with you in that whenever we're in the media, it's usually because something you know, quote unquote bad has happened. But for the 5,000 time a day that there are good, great, amazing things that happen, it never gets publicized. And something that you know, I think that we've been talking about as a leadership team: how do we promote the great work that's going on in our school more to try to fight against it.
So that was going to be my follow-up. What do we do, right? Like, we have this negative problem, and you're right. There's a political issue related to it. We are constantly in a stigma in this country where everyone thinks that their taxes pay our salaries, and we have some issues that we maybe can't overcome. But what can we do as teachers, as principals, as schools? What can we do to fight this?
Well, you know, I also... you know, kind of bringing it back to why you asked me to come on is I think it's also we can ask our students, because I think our students recognize the amazing things that happen in school every day as well. And they're probably some of the best storytellers. And there are many of them are the best users of social media to promote some of the great things that we're doing. I mean, I think we have to have a concerted effort. And I think that's really, really challenging when we talk about resources, when we talk from a time perspective and a money perspective. But I do agree with people like Joseph Filippo and in terms of telling your school's story and getting it out there. I do think in reality it's extremely time consuming to do, and it takes a lot of time. But I think it's without a doubt important work. And so you know, we do have an online presence, but I think just even within our parents, you know, with a regular newsletter of sharing great student work and great teacher-student collaboration that's happening in our school, I think goes a long way. And I think I think in terms of the results, I think we've done a good job of telling that story in the different ways that we have been doing it. Because when some of this quote unquote negative press does come up, the overwhelming number of parents know that there's great work that's happening in the school.
Hmm. Yeah. What kind of, because this is something I've been playing with a lot, especially in the modern social media climate where every Facebook post of someone I know feels like a minefield that I'm waiting to step in. Hmm. And I want to comment about people's opinions being ridiculous and absurd and close-minded. And I despise most of my own family at certain points. I just wonder, like, what responsibility do teachers have as individuals to promote their great work, address the negative stigmas? Like, do you feel like teachers should be doing some of this work in their own right? Or is it something that the burden should be put upon the school or the district?
It's a great question. I think the thing that I want teachers doing is interacting with students and everything that they need to do to create the learning environment that they create in their classroom. That, for me, should be their focus. I think my job as an administrator is to try to take all of the other crap and try to get it off of their plates so that they can do that. And certainly that's challenging, and that doesn't necessarily happen all the time. But at the same time, I think that the best person to be able to share the great work that you're doing is you. I think that if teachers do take that initiative, they are doing the best work to share the great work that's happening in the school. But when you say, is it their responsibility? I struggle with that because I think, you know, if it takes away time from them working with kids, then I think that, it's not something that they're passionate about. They'd rather be in the room working with kids, and I want to support them doing that. Our district has, hired a communications person, which I think has been a nice step for our district to be able to share the great stories that are happening in school. And so, as a leader, I guess I would think about, you know, are there positions that we can hire or create? Or, you know, even at a school level, are there stipends that we can create, where people can kind of take the leadership around the that kind of communication, as opposed to just allowing it to happen so organically? So I even think that when we expect principals to do it, is that there's a ton of things that are on our daily checklist to do as well. And so, I think that sometimes if we just say that, you know, it's our responsibility to do it, it may not happen.
Yeah. It's kind of the constant juggle of education, right? It's like a business would not begin to expect to survive without marketing. Right. And yet we tend to look at education like we don't need to market. At least I think generally speaking, we look at education like, okay, well, kids have to come here. So we own this space and we don't have to worry about it. But I think that especially in the modern day where I think every person is a brand, whether they want to be or not, you need that role. And yet how many, certainly I would think a lot of districts have someone in media relations, but how many schools have someone dedicated to that purpose other than, like you said, just throwing it on the plate of a principal or an assistant principal, like, okay, you're over social media now. And that's not that they have the skill set for that. They don't necessarily know the right ways to manage those things and have an impact with them. Nor do they arguably take the time to decide what the purpose of doing any of those things is. But you're right. Like, we don't often put a budget item in place for someone to manage the media and media relations of our schools.
Yeah. And do companies ask their engineers to market the company? You know, they hire a marketing team to do it. So I wish it was that easy for school districts or schools to be able to do that. But I do think that, you know, if we really want to do a good job at it, we need to think beyond just putting on, you know, individuals' responsibilities and trying to think of a structure where it's more sustainable. But something we tried in my previous school district that we've been sort of toying around with a little bit is in this school is having digital media liaisons. So having some students do some of that work. And like I said, we have a really powerful school newspaper and TV show, and they do a lot of news reporting. I also think there's a space for us to, you know, have some students do some specific promoting in the school using social media. And I think for high school, I think that's a great way of helping to develop, you know, students who are really interested in marketing, for example. That's a great way to help them develop their portfolio a little bit too.
I like it. Yeah, I like it. Lots of good stuff in there. We got some big picture ideas. We got some concrete ways to attack them. That's good. That's a good answer to question one.
There you go.
Let's go ahead and roll into question two then.
Okay.
And let's think, what is something that you're doing that you wish all educators would do?
Well, I think one thing that I've been really trying to work on is to be a better listener. And I gave a recent presentation at the National Association of School Principals conference on mindful leadership. And it's sort of something I've been thinking about that's an overlap of my 20 years of yoga practice with being a high school principal. And one of the things I've been really trying to work on sort of with the overlap of both of those is just kind of being more present, particularly when I'm meeting with people, and just really kind of listening to them and being more of a listener than a talker. And what I've found that it has helped is, one, is develop much deeper relationships with people in the building, sense of trust in the building, and better ideas have been developing because of it. And I think that, I mean, I think that I'm sure there are a lot, I'm sure there are a lot of great listeners out there, but I think that as educators, particularly when we are teachers, we're trained to do a lot of talking, right? And so being a listener may be a little bit more challenging. So I think more people in my role particularly, but I think all educators, I think we could do a little bit more, a little better job listening.
Yeah, I can see that. I myself am very guilty of saying things or hearing only in so much as I'm ready to give a response. Certainly something I need to continue to work on in my own practice. Brad, absolutely. But yeah, I think, you know, myself, I'm certainly not perfect at this or even particularly good at it. I think I listen a lot to give a response, and that is sometimes my purpose. And I think a lot of times we think we're listening because we're listening for cues and trying to tack into the places where we understand and are ready to give a thought out response, but we're only giving a thought out response to part of what the person said. Mm. And when we're using brain power to process our reply, we're not really listening. And I think that's definitely something to consider. You know, it's something that I have been very reflective on in my podcast, for one thing, but also something that in my practice I have tried to be more reflective on, and in my marriage, because my wife likes to remind me that I'm not
listening. I agree. Wrong. That's probably where I'm the worst listener. With my marriage.
I mean, I already know what she's saying. It's exactly. Fine. She said, whatever.
Exactly.
It's, you know, but I think it's not only important in classrooms. I think it's important in life, but it is easy to forget in classrooms, right? Like, because there is this pedestal to being the teacher. Like, those students are there to learn from me. I want to get to know them and I want them to know I care about them so they'll listen to me, but I should be kid to know them and care about them so that they are known and cared about, not so that they will listen to me. And I think listening and active listening and really truly empathizing with what you're hearing are things that we all could do better at.
Yeah. I just finished reading the book Radical Candor. And you know, one of the big takeaways I've gotten out of that book is, if we want people to listen to us, then we have to listen to them. And, you know, certainly I want, when I feel like I'm making an important point, I want to make sure that I'm heard. And so I've got to pay that back, to people and recognize that listening doesn't necessarily mean does not mean agreeing. And when we disagree, it's probably the most important times to be listening to the other person to understand their perspective.
I like it. You know, I'm focused a lot in my practice now on staff morale as a coach and as a future leader. And then once I am a leader, I'm sure this will continue. Mm-hmm. And working on improving staff morale, because teachers are not trusted on the outside of education. They are overworked and underpaid, as we all know. That's, you know, it's not just a thing we say because we want pity when we're off on summers and enjoying fishing all week. You know, it's the reality is that the profession is tough. It is tougher than a lot of people realize. And we have a lot of pressures internally and externally. So I think it's really important that we work on staff morale. And I think a lot of that starts from the leader's perspective. It starts with being able to listen and hear your staff and not take it as personal when they say we're stressed, we're overworked, we can't do that. You know, when they're willing to say, when they say to you, it's too much, I can't handle it. That's not a slight on the principal. That's okay. I need to be reflective and hear what they're saying and then look at how I can help them, but not try to figure out how to help them while they're still talking, right? Like, I think that's the critical part.
Yeah, I think the you know, my instinct is wanting to fix things. And, you know, I think when we talk about your marriage, that's something that I'm certainly, I think, at fault at, particularly my marriage, is how to... is that I want to solve it and I want to solve something immediately, and recognize that when you're listening, sometimes that's the gift you're giving a person as opposed to actually trying to fix it for them. Hearing that's what they're looking for is just for you to be able to hear them out. But I think that some of the most successful meetings and difficult situations that I've had, I've actually said the least in those meetings than I would in other meetings. But just hearing the anger and the sadness of people in those situations, I think, is what leads to the trust building. You know, then maybe coming back with, you know, talking more in a follow-up meeting, but in that meeting, just sort of letting people get stuff off of their chest, I think has been really successful for me in those situations.
And 100%. I also have the fixed mentality because I just want to get stuff done. I want to, okay, that's the problem. Let's fix it and move on. Let's go. And that's certainly not always the right way to handle it. But, you know, I think a lot of times it is let someone speak, but more importantly, let them speak and clear their mind without judgment, right? Like, that's the really critical component to me is we all say things in frustration. So if you're going to listen, you need to listen with an empathetic ear of, okay, that's what they just said, but what they meant was, you know, you have to have that, like, that came out of frustration. That doesn't mean they really think this person is awful or that person did this to hurt them. They're just frustrated. So don't judge for what they have said, but judge for what they have meant, and be willing to support when needed. And yeah, being able to say, man, you know, I hear what you're saying. I have been in similar situations. That is rough. You know, what can I do to help? Do you need help right now? Instead of, here's what I can do for you. I think that's that critical component. So I agree.
Yeah. I think Brené Brown's book on it, Daring to Lead, I think has been a great guide for me in that level of how to develop that level of empathy. And recognizing that empathy does not mean, again, trying to fix anything or just saying, I'm sorry. You know, it actually may just mean, yeah, whatever is going on with you right now, that really sucks. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to let that sit there. Yeah. I'm glad you told me.
Interesting. Yeah. I like it.
All right.
I like it. It's good stuff. We got one more.
Okay.
One more to go. My last question for all my guests, of course, is who is the greatest teacher you have ever had?
So I would say that a person who I have not talked about in a while was my high school history teacher, Mr. Brown, who I had for 3 years. And he inspired me because he just loved his passion for being with kids. He took us on a school trip to Paris every year. I got to go 1 year. But he just loved being with us and laughing with us as kids. And for me, as that sort of excitement in the classroom is what got me excited about learning about history. And you know, there were definitely some hard times that I went through in high school, and he was just a person who, would listen to you and know when you had a bad day. He would not, as you were talking about in terms of judgment, he would not judge your, you know, moodiness as a high school kid, as that's who you are as a person, but that's just what's going on with you that day. But yeah, he was a person that just kept me wanting to learn more about history as well. And so, yeah, Mr. Brown, my history teacher, I would say, someone who inspired me. Yeah. I'd also just say one other shout out, because I do talk about this guy a little bit more often, is my math teacher, Mr. Kaplan, in seventh grade. And I talked a lot about him with my faculty, because he was a guy who, he had recommended me for honors math, and for whatever reason I didn't get put into it. And he actually went into, when I was in the next grade, he actually went into the classroom, pulled me out of the class and said, you're in the wrong class, and got my schedule fixed to be in honors math. And you know, I talk about that story because we in our school, we face an underrepresentation of African-American students in our upper level courses. And, you know, what the message he taught me as a one of the few Black kids in my school, what he taught me was that he was a teacher who believed in me. And I think that in order to close our achievement gap, that's something that we need more of, is our students recognizing that or seeing that there are people who have their back. And so he was certainly a memorable teacher for me as well.
Man, you know, I love when I feel like an episode comes together and there's a thread binding your three answers. And I think even our pre-conversation is it all comes down to that passion for what we're doing, right? It's Mr. Brown is this passionate teacher whose passion drove you to care about his subject. It wasn't that you really cared, right? Like I've had those teachers too, where it's like, I didn't love biology as a subject. I didn't really care that much about biology, but I loved Ms. Forsythe's passion for biology and the way she taught it and the way she made me enjoy it in her classroom, you know, and I loved that is my thing. Ms. Barnes now, it's not her name, she's not Ms. Forsythe anymore, but Mrs. Barnes, she is a passionate educator and it's amazing. And so I think that's great. And I think that even when you look at your responses, you know, listening to others, you know, listening to others takes a passion for what you're doing, right? Like you have to be passionate about what you're doing in order to be able to accept someone else's input. You have to be passionate to recognize that you could be wrong and someone else may have input you need, or you need to be passionate about the other people. And all the way back to the project your students are doing, which is just you being passionate about students and authentic voice and authentic audiences. And I think that across this whole episode, this idea of passion weaves itself in and out with a mix of authenticity that is I like it. I appreciate it. I think it's great. You know, I think that your last story there definitely touches on some major equity issues that I think we could do a whole other episode about. I was just writing about on a paper this afternoon, actually. You know, and I think there's definitely some major issues there that have come up on the podcast recently. But I'm going to choose to focus on the passion side to close this out and invite you to come back to have a longer discussion about equity in an upcoming episode. I would love to talk more about that.
Yeah, for sure. I really appreciate it, Brad. Thank you. That was nice of you to say. I really enjoyed this conversation. It's always fun talking about your school. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Henry, first of all, I appreciate your time. I really enjoyed our chat. I thought it was a great chat and I really appreciate it. If my audience enjoyed it and would like to reach out to you or follow what you're doing, where can they find you?
So I am on Twitter. I can be found at @TurnerHJ. And I will send you the our website for our Main Street project. That's the 3D sculpture project that we were talking about earlier, and so people can follow the progress of that that process as well.
All right, absolutely, and links to those as well as the picture of the sculptures your students are still working on are going to be in the show notes, because you definitely got to check those out. They're really, really impressive what these students have put together, and it was a great presentation at ISTE, one of those memorable moments that has definitely stuck with me from what is a very jam-packed 4 or 5 days, as you know, being there, and definitely stuck with me and has stuck with me as we've tried to schedule this. So I appreciate you making the time and having a great conversation with me tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Brad. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Henry, thank you so much for joining me on the show, and especially for talking about the awesome project your students have taken on. To connect with Henry, you can find him on Twitter at @TurnerHJ. Also, check out the Main Street Project at their website, which you can find in the show notes. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter and Instagram at Brad Schreffler. I love to hear from you guys there, and that's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or visit the feedback page on my website, which gives you options for feedback, that you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, remember that we can all be better listeners. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio, your voice is right here.